the Fastest Known Podcast will be not quite so fast this episode because it's going to be very special. We're going to do something we have never done before. We're going to attempt a wrap-up, a highlights from the first 6 months of this podcast. Yep, it's a little different, but what we're going to be hearing now is snippets from 7 different podcasts. So we're going to hear a steady stream, 7 different episodes, just excerpts. This will be less than 1 hour, and I think it's going to be really interesting. I'm going to tell you who you're going to hear. We're going to start with Anton Krupicka, our very first guest back on September 21, 2018. That's right, our first podcast. Actually, it's still the most popular, where Anton said, "Sometimes being successful just means getting back to the car alive." Yeah. And then we're going to hear from Carl Sabe from the Appalachian Trail, who noted, "I start to hit my stride after 2,000 miles. Okay. Christoph Teuscher, he did rim to 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 rim. Yeah, that's right, the quad. We're only going to hear from him for 4 minutes. So we're going to have a great summary about what he feels about the quad rim to rim. Heather Anderson, Anish, on the calendar triple crown. Jim Walmsley, you're going to hear from, describing rim to rim to rim alt, where he and his two buddies swam across the Colorado River twice. And then we're going to wrap it up with 2 episodes. First is with Peter Backlund, Claire Gallagher, and Tony Krupicka, wrapping up the FKT of the year for 2018. And lastly, we're going to hear Matt Lafort interviewing Killian Jornet regarding Killian's FKT on the Bob Graham Round. That's right. This is FKT of the year, Europe, from 2018. We'll finish this off. It's really going to be interesting, so stick with it. I can't say these really were the best. I couldn't choose. It was really hard to figure it all out because everything was so interesting. But we have about 53 minutes of really fun cuts, some of the best stuff. And after this, the next week, we're going straight into FKT of the year 2019. Yep, the votes are mostly in. To be honest, I think I know what's going to happen. It's really interesting. We have extremely close contests. No one hit it out of the park this year, so the voting was quite close, quite interesting. There was a lot of creativity this year, 2019. So let's roll the clips from 2018, including winding up FKT of the year 2018. Thank you very much. It's been really fun doing this, and we have some big news for 2020, so stay tuned. One of your more notable FKTs is the Long's Peak Triathlon, where you indeed, that's why it's called a triathlon. It's biking, it's running or hiking, and it's climbing.
Yeah, that was, gosh, I guess already 2 years ago I did that with my buddy Stefan Griebel, a fellow athlete here in Boulder, a mountain athlete. I would consider him a climber primarily, but he's really into the cardio stuff as well, biking and running. And that was a cool objective because it combines all three of those. And you have to be strong stamina-wise, endurance, but also technically proficient on an alpine big wall. So you start in
Boulder. Now, the traditional start was the bus stop. Is that what you did?
Yeah, we start from the bus stop in North Boulder.
Okay,
yeah.
And then you bike 44 miles, if memory serves correct.
Something like that, 40 to 40, I can't remember exactly. Yeah, 42 maybe, I don't know.
Up to the Long's Peak Trailhead, where you stash a bike in the tree or lock it to a tree, and then hike or run up to the base
of the diamond, yeah.
And that's why it's the triathlon, is then you climb the diamond, yep. Which is that a 10B or a 10A?
10A, yeah. It's like a 20-foot section that's 10A. The rest of it's more 5'8", 5'9". If the whole thing was 10A, I would have a lot harder time on it. Especially when our climbing rack consisted of 4 cams.
And 4 cams.
And 8 draws, so.
That's thin.
Yeah, but that's because it's moderate. It's a moderate route. Otherwise, and there's, you know, there's fixed pitons, not really any fixed gear, but a couple of slant anchors and a few fixed pitons on the route. So mm-hmm. there's other intermittent protection.
Some people would not call a 10A at 13,500 feet moderate.
That is, well, that's funny that you mentioned the altitude. I just climbed it again a couple weeks ago, and I was reminded of how much harder climbing at almost 14K is. It's just, you're kind of just maxed out on something that down here in Boulder and Eldo, you'd feel really comfortable on. So, yeah, that's a factor for sure.
And then you get to the top, and then you bundle up your gear, and mm-hmm. you run, jog, or hike down the North Face cables.
Definitely running. Well, I mean, you, there's a quick scramble down the cable section itself, but then you're running every step back down the trail end if you're trying to go quickly.
And yeah, you're going for it, and that's mm-hmm. you have to have terrific footwork because this is called the Boulder Field.
Yeah, the Boulder Field right below the cables is an iconic section for sort of the every person's route up the Keyhole route on Long's Peak, and it's just a jumble of boulders, and it's super tricky. I mean, trying to run through that quickly is at least as dangerous as climbing on the diamond itself, because you catch a toe, you're going to break your face.
Yeah, it's going to be the full-on yard sale.
Yeah.
And then you get back down to the trailhead, you get on the bikes, and mm-hmm. it's 44 miles back to Boulder.
Yeah, and that's where really that becomes the crux, because even though it's downhill, you get down to Lyons. Well, there's rollers even before that along the peak to peak. And then you get down to Lyons, and it's another 12 miles or so back to Boulder. And if you catch a headwind, or it's just there's these rollers, and you're at the end of this long effort. So it really is nice to have a partner to be trading, drafting mm-hmm. with. So
how long did it take?
It took Steph and I 9 hours and 6 minutes.
9:06?
Yeah. And that was... Well, we broke the overall FKT, and that we set the overall FKT doing that, but that was unsupported. So we carried all of our gear from Boulder to the top of Long's Peak and back.
So you're biking with ropes and...
Exactly. We're biking with a rope and our climbing rack and change climbing shoes, harness, all of that, helmets. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess you would definitely go faster with support if you had someone... even if you had gear stashed at the base of the diamond or something like that, just because you wouldn't have to carry all that weight up.
But 9 hours and 6 minutes is how long it takes some people to do Long's Peak up and back from the trailhead just...
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
I mean, there's people starting at 2-3 in the morning all summer long to
right.
go up the Keyhole route.
Well, that's sure. a good project. Congratulations again.
Thanks, Buzz. Yeah.
And you've tried a few other things in the past that haven't worked out.
Oh, I've done a whole search of stuff that hasn't worked out. I think that's something that is maybe not as widely realized, is that it doesn't always...
So people hear about the successes.
Yeah, people hear about the successes, and mountains are unpredictable, and that's why we go into the mountains, is because there's an element of uncertainty and adventure, and that means that you're going to fail a lot of the time, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kyle Richardson just set the FKT on the LA Freeway.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good route. I know you've considered it.
I've definitely considered it. It's something I'm still, I mean, I would like to break his time for sure. I think it's a super cool route going from Long's Peak to South Arapaho Peak. It's neat because there's a technical element to it that creates a certain barrier to entry, I think. You know, even something like Nolan's 14, which I've also attempted and failed miserably at, it never has to be more difficult than class 2, you know, basically just off trail hiking. But there's mandatory 5-6 on it, which is really cool. And it's
mandatory. You can't get around it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I don't know. That's just that's something that makes it interesting and engaging.
Well, we're talking with Kyle next, so stay tuned on that.
Right on.
But you can handle 5-6. Is there any other routes?
Usually I can handle 5-6. I've backed off 5-6 before.
But, yeah. Well, that's good. Let's just to dwell on that, because we talk about numbers. People always want to hear about the numbers, don't they? How far is it, et cetera, et cetera. What's the grade? But really, isn't it about how you feel?
It's always about how you feel. I mean, just like a year ago, I was up in the Cirque of the Towers in the Wind River Range in Wyoming, and There's a really classic alpine traverse there of all the towers in the Cirque. I think it's 10 peaks. And
Cirque of the Towers.
Yeah, Cirque of the Towers, Southern Wind River Range. And I got to the second one, the East Ridge of Wolf's Head, and I'm on-siting it solo. But that route is supposed to be 5-6, and I wasn't feeling comfortable with this certain traverse section. I looked thin and extremely exposed to me.
That's the hand traverse right.
Kind of a piton traverse, yeah. There's no crack, yeah. It's sort of this, like, well, it's a very thin crack that you can pound pitons into. But, yeah, it's these little dishes. It's just out on this face.
What kind of shoes were you using?
I was in climbing shoes, GC Pros, yeah. I wasn't just in running shoes. But, you know, I thought I'd done the crux of the route because I just, you know, 20 minutes before that, I'd soloed a 5-8 pitch on
Pingora.
South buttress of Pingora and felt 100% solid the entire way, you know. And so it's just, you never know, especially with an old school route like that or a historic route like that, I guess. You can never go by the grade.
Right. It's got to be how you feel. When I did that, I had backpacked in. I was on a 5-day backpack.
Right, okay, yeah, yeah.
And so I had brought climbing shoes for that.
I would recommend climbing shoes for that.
The hand traverse right, it gave me pause. I said, wow,
yeah,
really? This is it? Huh.
Mm-hmm. And I looked at a couple different options. You can go high, and there's actually a crack, and go low, and there's little dishes, and I just didn't feel good about either of them. So,
good call.
Yeah.
Good call. That's, I think fastest known times are a fascinating realm of the adventure world, aren't they? Because in a race, you're always looking at that number. Here's a distance, here's the vert. In a climbing, you're looking at the grade.
Yeah.
But in FKT, no.
Well, it just depends. Like, there's very few. I guess all the unknowns in a race are internal. Like, are you going to be able to maintain motivation, essentially, or stubbornness to overcome the discomfort? In an FKT, if you're trying to go fast on a less controlled route in the mountains, you know, one where there's no aid stations, there's no support system, there's no safety net, basically, you have to be self-reliant and make good decisions so that you are in order to be successful. And sometimes being successful just means getting back to the car alive. So, yeah.
Here's where we have to go right away. So these are some of the, an AT, some of the most famous ultra runners in the United States, and you were way faster. So how? I mean, what do you have to say about that? You mentioned that this is your specialty, but as you also mentioned, if this was a head-to-head race over 50 or 100 miles, someone else would come out on top. So how does one do this? You really did well. You have techniques here. What are they?
So I think also one of the important things to mention is age difference, of course. So Scott was 41. Carl was 48, I think, at the time, whereas I'm 28. And it's all about recovery during a 40-day or 50-day adventure like that. And it's just, I think, scientifically proven that as a 28-year-old, recovery is faster than when you're 41 or when you're 48. So that's definitely one of the reasons that Joe and I managed to better the times of Scott and Carl, Joe unsupported, and then me doing as much as 4 days of the record. So age is definitely one of the things.
Yeah, I think a very important one is the start of the day. When we did some presentations about the PCT, I always covered the fact the mornings that Carl was having were really slow, because it's just a barrier you got to go over through, because it's the day after day, another 50 miler, and you get up and you know it's going to be another 50 miler. But this time, Carl was extremely disciplined. He just woke up. We know he had only 20 minutes, and then he should start running. And we actually managed to stay within those 20 minutes. His breakfast was ready when he woke up. He had his coffee, and then he just got dressed, and then we immediately started walking. So we just found it was a really big difference already starting to walk, whereas he would stay still at the PCT. And well, I was always surprised when I had to get back to the camp how much how many miles we covered already just by doing the breakfast walking.
That's excellent. Excellent. So I appreciate the self-effacing comment again. It's age played a big factor. Then start of the day. That's brilliant. 20 minutes after waking up, you were moving forward.
Yeah, it's yeah, honestly, just time to get dressed and that's it. I had a coffee hiking already, and then that gave me some time to get my feet used to being in the shoes again. And as Joe says, by the time he got back to camp, he was always surprised by the ground we have already covered.
And then I think we tried to just keep that mindset. And every occasion where there could have been a stop, we tried to minimize it, such as like we had multiple backpacks. So last time in the PCT, we only had one backpack. So then he had to stop, wait for me to fill it up. Whereas now we just had to replace the tracker and his cell phone and another ready-made bag, and he could just move on again.
Yeah. And then also during these meetups with the crew, like it was funny, I had a few friends coming over to run with me. And then one guy said at the meetup, hey, why are you sitting on the trunk? You should have a chair so that you're comfortable. And then we were like, oh no, that's definitely part of the plan. It has to be uncomfortable, because once you sit down in a chair and it's comfortable before you even had the feeling that you had a break, it's already half an hour. It goes extremely quick during those breaks. So I just sat down a bit on the ground or on the trunk, and then I really had the feeling that I needed to get going again.
Another really important part that I think, and that Carl mentioned to me a couple of times, is this time, the first weeks we had pacers, so guys who were running with Carl, whereas last time in the PCT, he would be totally alone. And then when he would see me, that would have been like one of his highlights of the day, to have some social interaction. And I think he didn't have the need as much this time to stay at the crew and talk it over, because he had some company during the run, during the day, as well some local people who just came up and started running with us. I think that helped a lot by not having the need to stop longer at the resupply stops.
Got excellent suggestions. Multiple packs. I've seen people do that at ultra races before, but you took it to another level by using that technique on a multi-day trail run. So it really comes down to a term Peter and I coined a number of years ago, relentless forward motion.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah, that's
I think that's a really good term.
That's how you can summarize an FKT attempt, in my opinion.
Nice. And indeed, when I first started looking at the big long trails, I was flying Brian Robinson, who did the calendar triple crown here in the United States. And we did a full day with him, and it was so educational. Of course, the guy didn't run a step, and he was doing much bigger mileage per day than ultra runners do because of relentless forward motion. Time moving forward on your feet is really what's going to. Saying here, Christoph, is that you ran back and forth across the Grand Canyon four times.
That is correct. Yeah. Eight crossings or four double crossings.
And you are the only person ever to have attempted this. And it took you, I believe, 58 hours and 11 minutes. And the person who did the triple took 68 hours. So you did one more crossing in 10 hours less than the previous person did a triple.
I had a pretty good day, I guess. Yeah.
Well, pretty good 2 days.
2 days.
So here's the big question that we're all wondering. Who are you?
I'm a professor at Portland State University, and I started running 5 years ago. I never was a runner, and I really got into it very, very quickly. I realized that I could go the distance without too much effort, and if I put in the training. And so I started running more and more. And from a 50K, it became a 50 miler, then a 100 miler. And now I'm doing distances that I never thought I would ever possibly do on foot. And that is very fascinating to me in many dimensions.
Well, you went, you are a professor of electrical and computing engineering at Portland mm-hmm. State University. So do you core, and then one should go to your website, and we'll put this in the show notes. It's christophtuscher.com. And you have this remarkable little CV here that it just, you just went big. I mean, 5 years is not a long time ago, and you just went for the big stuff right out of the gate.
Well, I would say gradually. I mean, it really, running is so incremental, and if you're willing to put in the time and the effort, you can do these things. And certainly, I think I realized that myself. What I thought was impossible is suddenly possible just because you put in the training. And in running, there really aren't any shortcuts, right? You put in the time, you put in the training, and you can't just magically do things out of nowhere without any training. So I think, you know, pretty much, I wouldn't say anybody, but most people could do it if they're willing to put in the time.
Most people could do 168 miles with 44,000 feet of elevation gain.
Well, I trained really hard for this, right? I 2 weeks before, I did 30,000 feet, just hill reps up and down to sharpen my mind and make sure my body was ready. So again, it's not something that you can just do out of the blue. And I felt pretty ready for this challenge. And it wasn't one of the most difficult things I've done. I think it's certainly mentally challenging, perhaps more than physically, actually.
You say it was not one of the most difficult things you've done.
Well, not from, you know, considering the conditions, the weather was great, you know, it's a nice trail, there is no navigation involved. And I've done other challenges where it required me to navigate constantly, and you had to deal with much more wet conditions or cold conditions than at the Grand Canyon. So the Grand Canyon was, in that respect, at least, pretty straightforward.
That's a very good point. There is no navigation. If the Kaibab Trail, it'd be hard to deviate from that.
Right, yeah.
On the other hand, this is equivalent, what you did, of 14 Mount Everest climbing from base camp in terms of distance, or in terms of elevation gain, going up Mount Everest four times from base camp.
Right. Yeah.
Talking with Heather Anderson. Welcome, Heather. It's been a few years since we've talked. It's good to talk with you again.
Yeah, good to talk to you too.
Now, your resume is rather startling. You had the self-supported record on the Pacific Crest Trail, the Appalachian Trail, and the Arizona Trail all at the same time. And your PCT self-supported record of 60 days still is the overall, which means female as well as male. Your Appalachian Trail, a time of 54 days, also was the overall record. And your Arizona Trail of 19 plus days, set in 2016, was also the overall record until just 2 weeks ago. So that's mm-hmm. quite a stunning resume you have there.
Thank you.
And you have a particular style, one might note. You kind of own this. You recently set the fabled Triple Crown, the first female to do the calendar Triple Crown. And I'll just briefly mention what that is. That's the mm-hmm. Pacific Crest Trail, the Appalachian Trail, and the Continental Divide Trail, through hiking the whole thing all in 1 year.
Correct.
Now, I think you're the first female to do the calendar Triple Crown. Is that right?
Yes, I am.
And I guess got to just jump right in here. That's I forgot. That's like 7,000 miles, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it depends a little bit on which route you take on the Continental Divide Trail, because the CDT is still has a lot of route options. So you can hike anywhere between 22 and 2,900 miles on that trail. I definitely hiked over 7,000 miles this year, but I don't know exactly how far. But yeah.
Well, 7,000 miles is plenty. And
yeah.
You described this as a 15-year-old dream. So that means you've thought about this for 15 years?
Yeah. So our mutual friend, Flyin' Brian, did this in 2001. He was the very first person ever to do the calendar year Triple Crown. Backpacker Magazine wrote an article about him that was a bit delayed, but I read it after I finished my first through hike in 2003. So I guess it's good they delayed it, because as soon as I read that article, I was like, I'm going to do this.
Wow.
And it took me 15 years to get around to it. But I mean, my mom still remembers that day that I came like running down the stairs with the magazine in my hand, waving it at her going, I'm going to do this.
Wow. That's an incredible story. So you got stoked 15 years ago and now you've done it.
Yep. Yeah. So it was and Brian came out and surprised me at the end. Like, he drove 15 hours and slept at a trailhead and found me on my last day and hiked the last like 10 miles with me. And so that was really, really incredible and super meaningful to me to have the person that I read about that made me want to do this 15 years ago show up and be there at the end of the journey with me. So
that's so classic, because that shows the community, doesn't it? How so- Because everyone knows rim to rim to rim, you especially, since you have the FKT on that. So how's this different, or just describe this?
Yeah, so this one is going to be the alternative rim to rim to rim, as you've named it. You're kind of one of the founders and pioneers of this route, but it's really aesthetic because it's the only other trail that goes from the South Rim all the way to the North Rim on a continuous trail. But the catch being, it doesn't have a bridge or any real means to get across the river like the Kaibab Trail has, where you run across the Black Bridge. So this one, you gotta bring gear down with you and kind of figure out a way to psych yourself up to get across the river. and then the trail itself is just completely different. There are sections that are great and they're runnable, but for the most part, you're running through creek beds, you're bushwhacking, you're looking for cairns. I think we just constantly had an ongoing joke during the day. Or I guess I'll preference this as well as, so you did it with Peter Backwin and Charles
Corfield.
Okay. In 2014 originally. And so we did it as a group as well. So it ended up being myself, Tim Frericks, and Eric Sensman that kind of embarked on this journey. So when I say we, it'll be the three of us that are kind of the three that set out to do it. We also had Jamil Curry ran from the South Rim down with us to help kind of just document it. He thought it was a really cool idea and wanted to help tell that story. And then we also had Chris Thornley hike down in the dark. He's the guy on the safety boat across the American River during Western States. And I guess in the ultra running world, a lot of people know his brother, Craig Thornley, who's the RD for Western States.
So he's seen you swim before.
He has seen me, swim before and seen me in tricky spot before, because there's kind of a little YouTube video that people can find of just, if you Google Jim Walmsley swimming Western State, something like that, you'll see where I kind of get swept down. And I think they've altered the rules now at Western States. You have to hang on to the rope, because I had heard that Rob Carr like actually swam across and people are like, oh, it's the fastest I've seen anyone get across the river. And in 2016, I was definitely trying to just go as hard as I could and get super fast time. And so I ended up trying to swim across, and before I knew it, I was getting swept down by the current. I found the life jacket really sweeps you down a bit too, is my opinion on that.
But on the Grand Canyon, you don't really want to go down that far, do you? So you alluded to psych yourself up for the swim across. So that means you get down to the river, and you did this in December. You did this on December 12th. And you're looking across that river, and what are you guys thinking?
It's a lot bigger than the American River. I think it's probably 4 to 10 times bigger than the American River as far as cubic feet per second flow rate. The main part is kind of figuring out a place that you're comfortable crossing with, because you have the Bass Rapids that you can see down there. And originally, we were going to do this a week earlier. And I think I ran into you at the running event and told you we were going to do it on a Tuesday. And temperatures, we originally wanted to camp out the night before, but temperatures ended up just dropping around the state. So you're at an elevation at the south rim at like 6,700 feet. So just the nights get really cold, and we weren't up for camping in single digits or in the teens sort of thing. So we decided that we still wanted to go check it out. It had been a route that I've never seen. So there's only so many routes in the Grand Canyon that go from rim to river, and the Bass Trail being probably the most western one on the south rim, in kind of the beginning of the classic Grand Canyon, and especially like the park area. It's like the westernmost side. So it was ended up kind of being a scouting trip, and we brought all of our stuff down. We were going to practice swimming across and back and just kind of get a feel for it. And basically we got down there for our scouting trip, which was supposed to be the day. And we just stood and looked at the river for probably 30 minutes and was just like, well, someone's got to go first and this and that. And more or less, it ended up being, well, let's just not make this into a crappy day and get super cold. Let's just pack it up. And we know what we're dealing with right now. And the interesting part is we were actually looking at a part of the river that was upstream of the Bass Rapids. And the trickiest part about that is if you don't get across, you are taking a ride. So that was, in retrospect, a really good call not to try to cross there. I think it could have been really bad. And we went back and we talked with more people in Flagstaff, and we went back and looked at your data and pictures and stuff. And it's just like, I think I actually got outvoted on the practice day. Tim was like adamant that that would be the spot. And then Eric was like, oh, Chris Thornley said, go super far right because that's the best spot to hit. And I'm just looking at it like, that's right above the rapids. Like, you're kidding. And I'm glad we at least thought about it. And we decided to cross downstream from the Bass Rapids. And then you have probably a quarter mile at least before the Chinuma Rapids. And that one gets trickier because even if you go for a ride through those rapids, now you're in some box canyons that's extremely hard to get out of. So yeah, you definitely need to get across the river. And kind of once we did it the first time, Chris talked me into, or I guess on the 12th when we actually went for it, my idea was just, I'm going to get down there, I'm going to change, and I'm just going to go. So right now, I'm not even sure if there's any footage or pictures of me crossing the first time, because I just took off and I swam across. And more or less, my idea was just, I want to set the tone and like, we're here to do it. We're not here to chicken out. And we're going to kind of really take that mentality as doing it. But Chris Thornley was really adamant about hit like kind of the tail of the Bass Rapids and use that to kind of propel yourself onto the beach. And I definitely got a little more ride of a ride than I was looking for while doing that, and kind of got thrashed around by the rapids a little bit.
Well, but, Jim, I think you're identifying for the listeners what they might be in for. I think Daniel commented later, I think this is going to take off now, but people listening to this might be having second thoughts about that. You've described it real well. You get down there, you're alone. There isn't a ranger standing over your shoulder. No. There isn't an aid station on the other side. So if you get into trouble, it's all up to you.
It's a very real situation. And I think going down there to scout it out really put that in context better than anything else. And getting our eyes on the river and actually contemplating swimming across the river, it ended up going a lot better than I think we thought it would. And I know when the first time crossing, we were just all pumped with adrenaline. The other guys swam down a little bit to avoid some of the fastest moving water that I hit, and kind of went around it and still made it across pretty well. But on the way back, we decided we were going to go further downstream from the rapids, and the swim back was much less eventful and went really smoothly. So I feel like now we have the spot of definitely where we would like to cross, and lots of confidence to swim it if we ever want to do it again. But yeah, it kind of learning where to cross and making that decision was a bit interesting. And
well, that's classic FKT action. Obviously, you're a top ultra runner. You know, this country, UTMB, then FKTs are a different game. When you and I talked in person at the running event, we had a great conversation, and I noted, yeah, you got to hit the crossing. Because like you said, if you go down, it's going to get interesting down there. That water is cold. And of course, this time of year, the air is cold, and you can't always get out.
Yeah. And I had friends kind of throwing out the, well, what if one of you guys get swept down? And I'm like, well, it's not really an option. If you get in the river, you got to make it across. Because even if someone starts to get swept down, even as a bystander watching your friend get swept, it's not a lot you can do until they cling on to some sort of wall and you can find them that way. But it can turn into an extremely real situation. What we did and ended up being the best call that we did was we bought these little Amazon dry bag personal flotation devices. So kind of decided our shoes took up too much room in it. We wanted the bag to have a little more buoyancy, but it's this 20 liter to 30 liter bag, rolls up as a dry bag. You can stuff your gear that you need on the north side. And we put everything in there, and then there's a little leash that connects to your waist. But that was huge, because whether you got tired or whether you hit a slow part of the river, we could grab that and just kick over. And that ended up being probably the best thing that we took down there, was just something that floated like that. It kind of acted as like a bit of a floaty paddle board. And
that was a brilliant addition. What was the preeminent FKT of 2018, in your opinion? Go ahead, Peter.
Well, I think on the men's side, it was pretty clear that it was Karel Sabe coming over and running the Appalachian Trail and breaking the old record by something like 4 days. It was just taking it to a whole new level. And and that was also really fun to watch. He had good tracking and good reporting on it. And it was an international thing, so that was really fun. So
on the female side?
On the female side, it was, you know, Claire did a fantastic run across Zion National Park. There were a few things that were quite impressive like that. And Taylor Nellens' Rim to Rim to Rim, which is one of the more competitive FKTs anywhere. And certainly the long trail effort by Alyssa Godeski, that was cool also because she's not your sort of typical FKT person. She's a professional triathlete, but crossed over to go after Nikki Kimball's long trail FKT and successfully did it.
Okay, so Carol was a clear number one for you, and for the females, you had Taylor and Alyssa.
Yep. And actually, for the men, I would also add Aurelian Sanchez's unsupported John Muir Trail was just phenomenal. He just blew it out of the park. Second fastest time ever, completely unsupported. And it seems like he did it just by basically not sleeping for 223 miles through the Sierra. Sick.
That's one technique. We'll get back to that. So, Claire, the same question and female and male answer, please.
Yeah. I think I'm going to agree with Peter on the males. Beating the AT record by 4 days is absolutely mind-boggling, especially with, like, and who knows, maybe the fanfare of the prior FKTs, Metzler and Jurek, I don't know, makes it slower. But it's extra and more impressive just how quietly he did it, at least in my opinion. And then Taylor, I think the Grand Canyon rim to rim to rim was so cool to watch. Like, one, Ida to break it. Oops, sorry. And then for Sandy to go after it, you know, with, like, no guarantee or even, you know, idea that she would get that close. Yeah, and then Taylor, the same. Yeah, it's just, like, so much balls. And so, yeah, I'm going to give it to Taylor.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Tony, what are you thinking? The preeminent FKT.
Well, it seems like we have consensus here. I don't know if it's Carol or Carell. He's Belgian, right? Mm-hmm. I thought that was super rad. Mostly, well, probably the only reason I even knew that much about it was because of the interview you guys did with him. And I thought what was notable was how open and sort of innovative he was with his tactics. And I also thought it was notable, and this is just an outsider looking in, kind of, he seemed to finish it without it being this, like, soul pulverizing experience. I don't know. Whereas, you know, Strind being last year unsupported, super awesome, still really respect that. But Scott and Carl before him, it's like both of them just like got so worked. and Carol just seemed to kind of like crush it, floored by 10%. Thought it was really cool.
And he had like a 4 extra days in the U.S., right? And he's like, I'm going to go on vacation now.
You know, he flew across the ocean. Yeah, he budgeted or didn't budget the time, but ended up with the time. And then the women, exactly, Taylor in the Grand Canyon. It's probably the most classic kind of mid-distance FKT in the country. She's had podium results at notable ultras in the country this past year, but I think this shows that she's, I mean, Ida's arguably the best 50-mile trail runner in the world, you know, for women. So for Taylor to come in and break her time is super impressive.
Nice. We have a little bit of a consensus here, don't we?
Yeah.
Of course, Carol's, we mentioned a few things about him. He didn't look like he just got out of Auschwitz when he finished.
Exactly, yeah.
And our conversation with him, and you know, going back and listening to that podcast, please, as I think that was about a month or so ago, and as Tony mentioned, he was very straightforward. He knew what to do. He approached this he basically back-engineered how to do this.
Yeah.
And his key discovery, remembering our interview, was you start early. You go hit it. You get it done. And he never went on the rivet.
I thought it was pretty funny how
he was just literally the opposite of how other people have done it.
Yeah. How he just, like, used the jet lag to his advantage and just continued with the, like, 2 a.m. wake up, 7 a.m. whatever to, like, be on the trail by 4. Kind of, I don't know. It's kind of funny. But
He identified something that which likely other people are going to attempt to follow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because he came into camp, so to speak, and then every day hydrated and well-fed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you know, certainly to give Scott his due in comparison, you know, Carol's talking about how he was just switching packs out at, like, crew meeting points. Scott's, like, signing autographs and leading trail lines and doing selfies. And, I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, there's obvious room. I guess when Joe McConaughey went and broke the overall record unsupported, it was like, okay, there's definitely room here in a supported effort to lower the record further.
Joe kind of pointed the way that if he could beat two of the best ultra runners in the country going unsupported, there's room.
Yeah.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
And Carol just didn't have a bad day.
Oh, really?
I mean, he got to the White Mountains, and everybody's like, oh, he's going to slow down when he gets to the White Mountains. And the weather was just terrible when he did the presidential traverse, and he just smashed it out.
Nice. It's cool. Yeah.
On the female side,
great to have 45 great days.
Yeah, that definitely is something special about the UK. What I loved looking at those attempts on those rounds, whether it's like the Charlie Ramsey or the Bob Graham or the Paddy Buckley, like, it's like that sort of like low key approach and that immersion within the community is like, it's not like you go there, you do your stuff, you put an astonishing time and you go home. It's like you have to get a different approach. You have to like talk to people, like tell us a little bit more about your experience when you went after the Bob Graham record. Like how did you manage that? How did that happen?
Well, it was something I had in mind for a long time, I would say, since some years, but it never happened to have the opportunity. And actually this year, it was kind of last moment. I was racing Mont Blanc Marathon and I saw there that I was okay after the injury. So I decided the day after, okay, I go to UK. So I was deciding like on Monday to go to UK, and then I arrived on UK on Tuesday, and then I just meet some guys there and say like, yeah, if they wanted to help me, they were super open. And actually it's fun because Rob Jeb wanted to do, to try the Bob Graham round, to try to do a good time there. And at the end, he thought that it was too warm, the temperature, it was crazy. So he pulled it out. So actually, I was talking to him. I didn't know that he wanted to try. And I asked him if he wanted to help me because he knows the road and he knows the track by hand. So I asked him, and then he turned out like to be super helpful. He called all his pacers to help me, and it was an incredible journey. Not only the run, but like to be there with these guys that they really know that place. And I was discovering the mountains with them. And it's about community, most of that. And especially there, like you need to have pacers all day round. Like it's something I'm not very fan, or I normally like to go alone and by myself. But they're like kind of the rules is that you need to have pacers all the way. So they verify that you are going there. And in terms of safety, like, so you are, safe all the way. So it turns out that it was not only pushing by myself, but talking with people, discovering the mountains, having good chats at the beginning. And then like I was chatting much, but we had some good conversations at the first, halfway.
Nice. I mean, yeah, this is one of the particularities of the Bob Graham run is that you need witnesses. You need people to verify and testify that you checked all the hills.
Yeah, 42 summits. Yeah.
so that's pretty impressive. Like to see that you have to follow like some sort of rules, but that's part of the experience. And it's the way also to adapt and to adjust to the specificities of the event, which is nice. Like one beautiful thing is that Billy Blen was there at the end. You managed to share.
Yeah, he was there. Like I met him some days before I was going to run. I was going to visit him, and he was very helpful on like telling some tips and very like sharing his experience when he did at the time. And actually it was, when I came like the second leg, at the end of the second leg, he was there sharing. He still do a lot of sport. Like he cannot run much, but he's cycling like a crazy man every day. So he was going with the basic bicycle to meet me in the end of the second leg, and also to meet me in the end of the fourth leg. So he was sharing during the run, and then he was at the end, and like also like I had the same amount of pacers that he has, and some of the pacers I had, they were the sons of the pacers he had. So it was really was really cool. Like it was an incredible experience to share with the pacers, but also with Billy and Martin, the guys that they were helping Billy's run, and they were helping also mine.
Great. I mean, that's because like people like sometimes they will assume that based on your experience and your record on the Matterhorn and your Summit of My Life project, like getting to like something like that is like far less technical, like the Bob Graham round, people will think like why you would even do that now. And it's interesting because it's beyond just the route. It's like the whole history. Sounds like just like the history and the community and getting into something different. It's like super appealing to you.
Well, yeah, like Bob, it's incredible. Like we think that trail running is a new sport, and we cannot be more wrong about that. Like when you see like when the races started in UK, like it was in the 1800s, it was a lot of races, and they started with this. With the rounds in the Lake District and in Scotland, and the Bob Graham round, I think it's from the 32. So in 1932, Bob Graham did these 42 summits, and at the time they were doing the 24 hours challenge. That is how many summits you can do in 24 hours or in 72. So it's crazy. Like it's not something new. It's something that it has been there forever. And people were like very strong. Like when you see like Billy's times, even in trail races, in classical trail races, or like Kenny Stewart, that was also like at the time, like racing with Billy, and he was pacing him in the first leg. He still have the Ben Nevis race record. He were running like 2:11 in marathon. So they were very strong runners, and they were trail runners at the origin. So like you can see that trail running is not new. And when you go to UK, especially and in the lakes, you really feel that it's like trail running. It's not something new like trail running that it's now in Facebook, but it's something that it's part of the history of the sport in the Lake District.
Nice. That's great. So one thing that also like surprised lots of people, I mean, I was surprised myself, is like sort of the low key approach that you managed to keep. So you said it was like sort of a last minute push. You decided on the last minute to go there, because like sort of like the timing was okay and you went for it. But like the support, like on social media, I mean, I saw like you crossing crossing the finish line, if I may say, just like because some people were streaming through their Twitter account, like sort of like the waiting of your arrival on the main place. That was amazing. So it's like, and it's so different from what we may see these days with like brands being more and more involved to support their athletes. And for like some purists, sometimes people feel like it's too much when they see like an FKT attempt with like, you know, like lots of like hoopla around, like lots of like marketing propaganda. And here that was totally different. So how do you manage as an athlete to preserve that, like those like personal project, because those are personal projects, we feel that. But as a professional athlete, how do you manage to like keep your hand on your project and make it like the way you want to do?
Well, like I think like it's us, the athletes, that we can decide how we want, and I think the brands, they just they are happy on it's like, I think it's cultural too. Like I don't like when I do a FKT like that it looks like a race, because for that you do a race. So it's a different approach, especially like it respecting the traditions of each place and each style that it's done, it has been done before. But yeah, like in the program I wanted to have a low-key attempt, and like I think the morning I started, it was maybe like the pacers and maybe 3-4 more persons that knew that I was there to do it. But yeah, like it's hard, I think, like now to keep low key things if someone else know, like for example there, like it was like that, but when I was running, then like some people saw me running, and then it was like over the social media, and at the end it was like a bunch of people, so it was like it was evolving. So it's hard to keep like that. It's possible to do some things like just by yourself and then publish after, but it's harder and harder, I think, if it's some assistance, or if it's in a place where it's other people that can see you.
Yeah.
But yeah, then I think FKT's attempts, or like these personal projects, it's a personal project, and it's the athletes that we should tell, I want to have this experience, and I want to have this experience that way, and that way can be just go for the best performance. So having the like full assistance and like full like whatever it is, or we want to have like something that is really like a more inner journey, and like to be out for ourselves and to take the decisions and to really experience something very different. And I think it's on us to have the control on that and say, I want to have this experience, and then try to manage all the surrounding, all the, if you need to do images or things, to be the experience you want to have.